Your great-grandmother may have been Danish, your great-great-grandfather may have come from Kenya, or your family might have immigrated from Argentina. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Your family origins may not have much impact on your day-to-day life, but for many of us, the holidays give us a chance to celebrate our heritage and indulge in some delectable family traditions. As we celebrate Hanukkah, we'll start off with traditions surrounding that holiday. We'll travel around the world talking about Christmas traditions, including those from Norway, Italy, Germany, Lebanon, Mexico, and Argentina. We'll also talk about Chinese New Year, Vietnamese New Year, St. Lucia's Day, and other winter celebrations. My guests include the Iowa Arts Council's Ricky Saltzman and Don Martinez Oropeza. We'd also love to hear from you. What cultural traditions are part of your celebration? Join the conversation. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Your family origins may not have a lot of impact on your day-to-day life, but for many of us, the holidays give us a chance to celebrate our heritage and indulge in some truly tasty family traditions. In the next hour, we'll talk about holiday traditions from all over the world, and we'd love for you to be a part of this conversation. Please give us a call and share how you celebrate your heritage in your holiday celebrations, whether it's with a special food or music or a special family tradition. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And joining me first today is Ricky Saltzman. She's Folklife Coordinator for the Iowa Arts Council. Hello, Ricky.
Hey, Charity. How are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's kind of, I'm looking forward to it.
Since we're in the midst of Hanukkah right now, I want to start with Hanukkah, which is a holiday you celebrate, right?
Yes.
How, I know that it's not an old world holiday in many ways. The way that we celebrate it in the United States is different from the way it had been celebrated traditionally. But what are some of the old world traditions that have been brought into the modern Hanukkah celebration?
Well, actually, we do tend to do it more old world in our house and in much of the Jewish community. So, I mean, If you're Jewish, you have an obligation to light the candles, and there's eight candles. There's a shamus, which is the servant candle, and you light one each night. All Jewish holidays start at sundown. So we started Hanukkah last Wednesday with the first candle, and you light one each night. And then, you know, traditionally the kids get Hanukkah gelt, which is money, and there's, you know, little gambling games. You play with a dreidel, the little top. And then, you know, usually the kids, you know, I guess this is more New World, get, you know, one little present each night. When I was a kid, you know, we got that when we were little. And then as we got older, we kind of got to pick one big present. But, you know, there's no outside the house decorations as people do for Christmas. And, you know, pretty minimal, if any, decorations inside the house. I have some friends who do a fair amount of inside the house decorating. And, you know, we did a little bit more of that when my daughter was little. But, you know, at this point and this year, especially with Hanukkah coming early, the Jewish calendar is a lunar calendar. So there is some movability of the different holidays. So this year it started on December 3rd, which was just a few days after Thanksgiving. So it kind of caught everybody a little off guard.
I'm sure that's true. What kind of food traditions go along with Hanukkah in your house?
Fried foods. It's the only occasion, I think, that you ever really see fried stuff in Jewish tradition because of the oil. You know, the miracle of Hanukkah is that the oil from the desecrated temple after they reconsecrated it after the Maccabees, you know, won the war, was only supposed to last for one night, and it lasted for eight, which was just enough time to have people go off to get the consecrated oil and come back. So, you know, that's kind of how that worked. But as a result, we fry things. So because my family and many of the Jews in this country are from Eastern Europe or Central Europe, we do potato latkes, which are fried potato pancakes. And I think after the third or fourth evening of them, we're tired of them. This year I actually did sufganiyot, which is an Israeli custom, Middle Eastern custom, which are donuts. Except I had a sopapilla mix, and since a friend who's both Jewish and Latina and her family were coming over, we tried that. So my daughter has been inhaling them ever since and says, "We need more of these. Can you make them again?" So fried stuff, and then because it's a latkes are traditionally served with applesauce and sour cream, which makes it into a dairy meal. And we have friends who do keep kosher, which means you don't mix milk and meat products together. So it ends up being a dairy meal, which can include fish and other cheese or dairy products.
And the holiday goes for 8 days. So do you prepare special foods every day of those 8 days?
No, not at all. We get together with friends, usually a couple nights of it. There are parties all weekend. It's a minor holiday in the Jewish calendar, and it's really only become a big deal in this country because of Christmas and the coincidence. I mean, all cultures do have these midwinter holidays hovering around the winter solstice. It's a light holiday. We light candles. Many cultures do that. So, I mean, really, the traditional big gift-giving holiday in the Jewish calendar is Purim, which comes usually in March. Again, it's a lunar calendar, so things move around. But that's sort of like Mardi Gras and Christmas and Hanukkah all kind of thrown together, if you'll forgive the total multicultural oxymoron there.
I'll forgive that. It sounds, so many of our holidays in the United States, because we have so many cultures that come together, we have so many traditions mixed together. I think that's a perfect way to describe it. I love the fact that you used sopapilla mix to make your donuts. I think that really speaks to a truly American holiday.
Well, it was one of those where I was kind of rummaging in the cupboard, and I'd gotten the mix a couple years ago when I was out in the Southwest, and I thought, oh, we could do this, and then I don't have to mess with yeast, and I've never made donuts before, so I thought this could be easy.
Well, let's move on to Christmas now. The solstice comes before Christmas, but all of these holidays are sort of gathered around solstice. And, I know that the traditions date back a long way. And I think a lot of different cultures made their holidays or their reasons to celebrate happen around the solstice time because of the early solstice celebrations. So what kinds of elements of those solstice celebrations do we see working into Christmas and our other holidays?
Well, I think, and I totally agree, as you said. I mean, all if you look at a traditional calendar, whether you're a Christian or Jewish or a Muslim or Hindu or Buddhist or whatever, you will see holidays hovering around all the solstices and the I forget what it's called in the spring and fall. But those are the times of year of seasonal change. I mean, especially the solstices are, the longest and the shortest days of the year, regardless of which hemisphere you're in. It's going to hit one way or the other. And so, for us in the Northern Hemisphere, as we approach this increasingly dark time of year, you want light. And so all of these holidays have, from Guy Fawkes Day in England, which is November 5th, it's bonfire night. We've got, Halloween that hovers around the same time, followed rapidly by All Saints Day. And that kind of sort of starts off this season. The fall, I am blanking on the name, equinox.
Equinox, yes.
So that's the time, when the season is changing, and it's a dangerous time in a traditional culture. You don't know what's going to happen. It's getting dark. The days are starting to get shorter in the fall. In the spring, it's getting light. In the fall, things are dying. In the spring, things are growing. And so there's the, anthropological theory about it, which I think is probably right, is that people do try to control the natural world with things in the social world, when seasons change, the world kind of turns upside down a little. So we have masking holidays in the fall, and that follows through Purim, which happens fairly close, to the spring equinox. It's you're mimicking the upheaval in the natural world by putting it in the social world, and you're controlling it because, oddly, rarely do revolutions and riots actually happen on these occasions, although they do sometimes when things just get a little too crazy. But, you do get a lot of house visiting traditions happening.
Caroline is on the line from Amana. So I want to talk for a moment about the Christmas in the Amana colonies and some of the German traditions. Hello, Caroline. Hi, Caroline. Can you hear me? Hi, thank you so much for calling us today.
Okay, you're welcome. I was very honored to be asked.
Well, I'm delighted that you're willing to be a part of the program. This is Caroline Trumpold, who lives in the Amana colonies. And how have you traditionally celebrated Christmas in Amana?
Well, I guess the traditions that I was going to refer to were from my childhood more, but we celebrate Christmas just the way everybody else does, I think, with family gathered. And one of the things that I have carried on until after my husband died was to put up a pyramid.
What is a Christmas pyramid like?
A Christmas pyramid is a German tradition, which they began it to spare cutting down so many Christmas trees. So it is a tiered built out of wood and posts, a three or four tiered. Well, that's why it's called a pyramid. The lower level is bigger and then smaller toward the top. And there is a pole that goes through all the levels, and there are shelves at each level where you put decorations. And then there are paddles going around the top and candles along each level, which the heat turns the paddles. And so then the shelves revolve.
Oh, that's really neat. And that was in place of a Christmas tree in
Correct.
Olden times, although your family often had a tree as well.
Right. And we did not, in my family, didn't put up this pyramid because one of my uncles had it in Illinois. But when it came back to the family, it had been built by my grandfather in the early 1900s, I'm going to say, because my mother was born in 07, and she knew it as a child. And then my parents refurbished it and got all kinds of little things, many shipped from Germany, little angel bands and things like that.
Well, I want to talk more about food as well with the German traditions of Christmas in just a moment. We're going to have to take a break. Caroline, will you be willing to stay on the phone with us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, terrific.
I'm talking. You said food?
Yes, food
yes.
Next.
All right. I have some food.
All right. Caroline Trumpold lives in Amana, and she's talking with us right now about Christmas traditions from Germany and from the Amana colonies here in Iowa. I'm also talking with Ricky Saltzman. She's Folklife Coordinator for the Iowa Arts Council, and we'd love to hear from you as well with your holiday traditions. How do you celebrate your heritage during the holidays? 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org.
Just living in the miracle, candles in my vehicle, eight nights, gonna shine invincible, no longer be divisible, born through the struggle, keep on moving through all this hustle, head up, head down through all of the bustle, New York City, wanna flex your muscle, look so down, look so puzzled, huddle around your fire through all the rubble, down to stumble and fall, my strength comes out.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about our cultural heritage and how we express that cultural heritage during the holiday season. And we'd love to hear from you. What are some of the ways that you celebrate your heritage during the holidays, whether it's with a special kind of food or a special kind of music or something? Maybe we were talking with Caroline Trumpold from Amana about a Christmas pyramid that has been passed down through her family. Maybe you have a tradition like that. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Ricky Saltzman is still with us. She's Folklife Coordinator for the Iowa Arts Council. And also Caroline Trumpold is on the line from Amana. So Caroline, tell me a little bit about some of the food traditions that have been passed down in your family.
Well, the one main food tradition is the Christmas Stollen, which is a yeast fruit bread. And the main ingredient that makes it a Stollen is maize. It gives it the really good taste. It's something that I bake every year and sell some or donate some to the Christmas bazaar that our church puts on. And I give to friends and relatives who are anxiously awaiting them when I bring them. And everyone enjoys it very much. Another main ingredient is maraschino cherries, both candied and also the bottled ones, you know. And I use the juice, and that gives the stolen a pink shade. And it's very attractive. I make different sizes. And after the loaf is baked, it's brushed with butter on top and sprinkled with sugar. And then some sprinkles of butter and a little bit more sugar. So that's the topping on it. And this is called a Christmas Stolen, S-T-O-L-L-E-N.
Well, it sounds beautiful and delicious.
It is.
Caroline, I'm going
to stay away from it.
I'll bet it is.
We also have some very traditional cookies that are baked at Christmas time, usually only at Christmas time. And one kind is a honey cookie, and it's called a Lebkuchen in German, L-E-B-K-U-C-H-E-N, Lebkuchen. And its main ingredient is honey plus sugar and flour and not a whole lot of flavoring.
And when would you eat those?
When would we eat them? Oh, whenever people come to visit. When my daughter from Tennessee comes, it's her favorite cookie, so she'll eat them right away when she comes.
Oh, that's great. Caroline, thank you so much for your call today.
Yes, you are welcome. And I am very happy to be able to do it.
And happy holidays.
And say hi to Ricky, okay?
All right. And, okay, and Ricky heard you. So I also want to introduce right now Dawn Martinez Oropeza, who's also with the Iowa Arts Council. She's Community Programs Coordinator. Hello, Dawn.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
And we're going to talk about Mexican Christmas traditions. And, of course, it's much warmer in Mexico when Christmas is celebrated. What are some of the traditional celebrations?
Well, we start this, this week is on Saturday on the 12th is the Day of the Virgin of Guadalupe. And so we start in the church doing rosaries and singing every night at the church. And then on the 11th at midnight, there'll be a processional here in Des Moines and throughout Mexico to a church service for the Virgin of Guadalupe. And then all day long, there's celebrations around the statues in the church for her.
What is the processional like?
It's actually one of the most beautiful things I've been to in Des Moines. They will, at around 7 or 8, they'll start dancing and everybody will start gathering at the church, Visitation Church here in Des Moines. And people will have candles and there's a huge statue of the Virgin of Guadalupe. And we will take her out and we proceed through downtown Des Moines to the cathedral where then there'll be a mass. It's packed. There's a Norteña band because we don't have a mariachi group. And they'll be playing on the altar. We will dance our Aztec dancing. And then after the ceremony at the church service, we'll take her back to the Visitation Church. And then starting 7 in the morning or 6 in the morning on the 12th, people are bringing bouquets of roses and flowers and different flowers and candles. And it'll be all around her, filling up the whole altar. And people come in at different times throughout the day. And we do some songs. There's a rosary. And then, like, there's another Norteña band who comes in. People come in and serenade her. There's a group from Zacatecas who does dance and drum that will also – people just come in and out all throughout the day.
So the party goes on all night long.
It's more of a celebration because the roots of it actually go back to Aztec time, and they would be celebrating Tonantzin, who's Nuestra Madrecita Tierra, the brown Aztec goddess. And so really it is a ceremony for her, is the original tradition of it.
Okay.
So it's more of it's more worshiping the brown goddess as opposed to a celebration ceremony.
But you don't sleep, it sounds like. If things start at 7 or 8 in the evening and then the processional's at midnight and people are bringing things at 7 in the morning.
The Aztec dance group, we don't sleep because usually, you know, we're dancing. We get up and dance first thing in the morning. We get a couple hours of sleep and then come back and then dance all throughout the day. And so we don't sleep. Everybody else will go home and sleep.
I know this is going to be a very tall order, but can you describe for me traditional Aztec dancing?
There is big headdresses with, we call them capilis. There's a lot of feathers. And our traje, our regalia, is a lot of gold with Aztec design. There's a headpiece, like a shoulder piece that you put over your head. And then the women wear skirts and the men wear a piece around their waist. And so sometimes it's – in the summer, it's usually bare, but we usually wear something in the winter because it's so cold when we walk – you know, when we're marching and dancing. So it's kind of looking like you would see something in Native American culture, but it's a little more sparse than that. Not so much feathers and things like that.
And I know that there was some concern that it wasn't going to happen in Des Moines this year. Is it for sure going to happen this year?
You know, we're still waiting to find out if we're going to be dancing or not. Usually we start immediately on the Monday. We'll start doing the, I believe it's a 5 o'clock mass. Singing and a rosary, but our group hasn't been informed whether we will be performing this year or not. And so I know the procession will happen, but, you know, pieces of it are starting to get removed, which is, I find, really heartbreaking.
Why is that?
There's been a change in the church, and so our group doesn't really have space to practice anymore. And the priest who was in charge beforehand, Father Kevin Cameron, was really supportive of all Indigenous traditions and culture from Mexico. And he loved it. And he really, you know, he had us up on the altar during Mass, and he just loved every piece of it. And there's been a change in the power structure there at the church.
Well, I hope you can continue with it. It sounds like a beautiful celebration. Tell me about food. What kinds of food are associated with this?
You know, we always just, because the group is all together, we usually have pozole or something like that, a soup, because we bring food with us. But there isn't a lot of food associated with the Virgin of Guadalupe. It's more Christmas time. And for Three Kings Day, that type of celebration.
Okay. And what, just briefly, what kinds of foods would be associated with those holidays?
Atole, which is a warm, it's almost like drinking, if you have chocolate, like a chocolate pudding, really warm and thick. And then we have tamales, pork or chicken. And then for Three Kings Day, there's a king's bread with the baby inside. And so those are the things that we usually eat. And then for our family, we usually have a mole, a chocolate mole with pork in it. So,
with most American celebrations of Christmas, we celebrate Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. It sounds like in Mexican traditions, the celebration of the season starts with the celebration of the Virgin of Guadalupe and goes through Three Kings Day. So is it a month-long celebration almost?
Definitely. Yes, our family in Mexico will be getting off of work pretty soon. And then they'll be off until January 6th, after January 6th. And every night you're doing a posada, which is within my husband's neighborhood block. Every night they'll go from one house to the next. And that's a party and celebration. And then you have one boy and one girl dressing up as Mary and Joseph. And the whole neighbors go over to one house and they'll sing songs. It's kind of like a call and response. And then once the family lets everybody in, there's tamales and atole or chocolate, and then they'll break a piñata. My grandparents, when they did it here in Des Moines back in the early 1900s, they would also do the rosary, and there'd be a lot of praying involved, and then there would be the piñata and the food. So,
wow. weeks of celebration then.
Yeah, it goes on forever.
Well, Don, thank you so much for sharing those traditions with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Don Martinez-Oropeza is with the Iowa Arts Council Community Programs Coordinator. And I want to go to someone who has a very special role in a Swedish celebration that's going on this year. And this is Corliss Burden. Hello, Corliss.
Hi.
Hi. And you will be celebrating St. Lucia's Day, which is on December 13th. And you have been chosen this year to portray St. Lucia.
Yes.
So what will you do?
What ends up happening during the celebration is the Santa Lucia story is told, and then in a candlelit room, while the tune of Santa Lucia is playing, I will walk around the room and I will serve pepperkakor, which are spice cookies, and those are our Swedish tradition. And then I will also have star children follow me, who will serve mint. And that's mainly what it is.
And you will wear a special costume. What will you be dressed like?
I will be dressed all in white with a bright red sash. And then I will have a crown of greenery on my head with candles.
With actual candles that are burning?
With fake candles.
Oh, fake candles. Okay, that sounds safer.
Yeah.
Well, this will be celebrated at the Swedish Heritage Museum in Swedesburg. How did you get chosen to be St. Lucia this year?
It was mainly because I really wanted to be one. And also, some people think that it's a beauty contest or it's because I'm popular. And that's not true. And it was a really big honor for me.
Well, that's really neat. And can you tell us a little bit, just very briefly, about the St. Lucia story that will be told at the beginning of that celebration?
According to legend, Lucia of Sicily was martyred for her Christian beliefs. And centuries later, she, as a saint, brought food to Sweden during a famine. The name Lucia comes from the Latin word for light, and the Swedish celebration of St. Lucia's arrival each year is on December 13th, which is the longest night of the year. So that represents a greater light and a stronger love.
And in Swedish homes, traditionally, this has been celebrated with the oldest daughter dressing like you're going to dress, although they used to use real candles,
yeah,
and serving the entire family. So this celebration is part of the community in Swedesburg now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Corliss, thank you so much for talking with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Have a wonderful celebration. Thanks a lot.
You too.
And Ricky, I want to return to you. I want to talk about some of the other Christmas celebrations in Iowa. There are a lot of Norwegians here in the state. What kinds of Norwegian traditions have been passed down?
Let's see. Well, even though I have not personally experienced all of them, I'm you know, usually not at their homes at this time of year. Lutefisk, which if you're Norwegian, I think I've got this right, is served with butter. If you're Swedish, it's served with cream. The potato pancake, which not really a pancake. It's really a flatbread where you mix potatoes and water and some flour and roll it out very, very, very thin. According to the ladies I've talked to and watched do it, it has to be almost translucent. And then it's cooked very quickly on a big flat griddle and then flipped over, and then you serve it with butter and sugar. Some people use it with their lutefisk, and I think I asked somebody years ago, I said, what's the oddest thing you've ever had with lefse? And she said, I think peanut butter and jelly, which would be really a total departure from the tradition. And I had thought years ago that this was something that was just an everyday food that was sort of made special in this country. And it turns out, no, this really is a winter tradition because it takes a lot of time. And up in Decorah and in Story City, people do it. Large groups of women in churches get together to do it. And it's a fundraiser. So they'll have people would put their orders in that sort of thing. And there's, a lot of pastries. There's Kranzekaka, which is a ringed cake. There's sort of a series of concentric rings, and you pour the batter into each one, and then you, when they're done, you take them out and you stack them, kind of like the pyramid that Caroline Trumpold was talking about, but this is an edible thing. And it's sort of stacked on a pole, so you can remove, see if I get this right, you remove the bottom ring and you eat it from the bottom, and that way you maintain your pyramid as it goes on. And then it's decorated, I think I might be getting this wrong, but with like a royal icing that kind of holds the thing together. And there's different kinds of cookies as well.
Another friend of mine who is of Norwegian descent was telling me about a kind of Norwegian pudding that her grandmother always makes for her on Christmas Eve as well. The name of that is escaping me.
Is it the Romagrat?
Yes.
I'm probably butchering.
Yes. No, well, yeah. that's what it looks like, at least when I read it.
It's rich. It's, I think it's cream and sugar, and I think it's got some cinnamon in it, and then that's kind of cooked down till it gets thicker, and then you add more cream and more sugar in case it's not quite rich enough. And it's also served to nursing mothers. It's an enriching food.
My guest is Ricky Saltzman. She's folk life coordinator for the Iowa Arts Council, and we're talking about holiday celebrations all over Iowa with traditions from all over the world. And we'd love to hear from you as well. Dan wrote us. He says, my wife's family recipe for Lebkuchen uses lots of flour, molasses, and candied fruit. It's baked at a low temperature and comes out quite soft. Also, it's very delicious and full of hearty flavor. And we'd love to hear about your celebrations as well. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send us email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about cultural heritage and how we celebrate our heritage during the holidays. My guest right now is Ricky Saltzman. She's folklife coordinator for the Iowa Arts Council. And we'd love to hear from you with your holiday traditions at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Ricky, I want to quickly tell you about a holiday tradition in my family. And this is an interesting one because it's very commonly celebrated in Ogden, Iowa, which is the town that I was born in. We moved away in between kindergarten and first grade for me. And it's a very German community. And everyone there, when I was a kid at least, the families would make something called Fudgens, which are a yeast-risen donut. And you mix raisins in with the dough. You let it rise a couple of times, and then you fry it. And they're not really donut-shaped. They're kind of strangely shaped, actually. You just drop them in off a spoon, so they kind of go all over the place. And then you take them out and you roll them in sugar, and they're best if you eat them right away. And I was really excited yesterday because I've searched for Fudgen information over the years on the internet, and finally I actually located a recipe online yesterday. But it seems to be a very localized tradition. I haven't found it in any German cookbooks. I haven't found it in any references from Germany. So it's a tradition that may be very Iowan.
I don't know. You know, and it may simply be that the people in your town, your family came from a very tiny town in Germany, and, you know, where they migrated to, it just stayed really local. And that's what's kind of one of the many cool things about Iowa is because people settled in particular areas with people often from their own towns, a lot of relatives, but just, you know, small regions kind of transported from wherever over to this country. And they really retain their traditions, which is just wonderful. I mean, it's great for me as a folklorist to get to do field work and research in it and interview people about it, because you do see, you know, of course, there's always changes. Traditions would be dead if they, you know, stayed frozen just in the past.
It's true. Well, and it's funny with these Fudgen recipes. I did get a cookbook from one of the local churches in Ogden, and it has 7 different Fudgen recipes, and they're all completely different. So
there you are.
it's a tradition, but it certainly has many variations. I want to turn now to how Christmas is celebrated in Argentina. And Nora Garda is on the line. Hello, Nora.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very good. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good.
I'm enjoying your program.
Oh, well, thank
here.
You. Thank you very much. And in Argentina, Christmas is a summer celebration. Tell me
exactly.
What it's like.
It's a big party in the summer. It's in the middle of the backyards and patios, and family and friends gather, and it's really, really hot. Yeah, we are talking about 90 to maybe 100 degrees.
Wow.
In the middle of December, yes.
And what kinds of things do you do to celebrate?
Well, we get together. The celebration is mostly on Christmas Eve. People gather late at night, like, let's say, around 8 or 9 p.m., because you have to kind of pace yourself to make it to midnight when everything happens. So people gather. There is no particular food that we associate with Christmas. You know, is sometimes maybe people grilling out or having the traditional empanadas with homemade pizza and sandwiches or a potluck. It just changes every year. And usually as we get closer to midnight, two things happen. Baby Jesus comes and Papa Noel comes too, all at the same time, and that happens at midnight. My mother used to make this nativity scene in the house, and she makes like this little, very simple nest where baby Jesus was going to be, and it was empty until midnight when she put the figure in the nest. And at the same time, at midnight, Papa Noel showed up, and it was usually an older uncle or cousin or whatever dressed up, and he brought all the presents for the kids.
So all of the children have to stay up until midnight as well?
Oh, yes, yes. People do stay until midnight because that is when presents come and everybody opens the presents right there.
How long...
And again, yes.
How long does the celebration continue into the early morning hours?
Yes, sometimes it does. I mean, kids might be going to bed like maybe at 1 or 2 in the morning. When you are in your like teens years or at college age, friends do get together after the family celebration. Sometimes you go dancing and that starts like at 2 or 3 in the morning. Or you just get together with friends at different houses, you know, just to chat and drink and play the guitar and sing, I don't know, do some kind of social activity. But kids do stay up late. And the other thing is that there are a lot of fireworks that you can, you know, just use in homes. And kids are doing that until early hours, yes.
So, and would there be organized fireworks displays in communities too, or is this just something that you would fire off at home?
No, it's usually something small that you do at home.
All right.
And
well,
you have, there are many, many little tiny places in each neighborhood, you know, there are these kiosks, these little stores that are open all day night. So kids come and go, get more money, go get more fireworks, come and light them and make a lot of noise in the house.
Well, Nora, thank you so much for sharing your traditions with us.
Okay, you are welcome.
Thank you
for having me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Tim is on the line in Davenport with some Norwegian traditions. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
Hi, how do you celebrate the holiday?
Well, I come from a family of Norwegian heritage on my mother's side, and one of the food traditions we have is a Christmas pastry that's called Fattigmann. It's my understanding the translation of that means poor man, and it's kind of a play on words because it's a very rich paste. I don't want to call it a pastry because it's a fried dough. It's eggs and egg yolks, whole cream, flour and sugar, and then you add cardamom, crushed cardamom as a spice, which is a very expensive, and I, as a little boy, I remember shelling the cardamom for my mom because she only wanted to use fresh whole cardamom. Then she'd send me down in the basement with it wrapped up, with the seeds wrapped up in a handkerchief, and I'd pound them out on the basement floor to crush them.
Oh,
now I
wonderful.
Use a mortar and pestle, but you roll out the dough. And you got to have a couple people because you get your oil hot and you cut them in triangular shapes with a little hole in the middle. and you fry them up, and you make like 20 dozen, so you have them all through the Christmas season. But people, when they first eat them, kind of take a bite and kind of go, well, that's kind of blah. But after you've had about 10, you're hooked for life.
And is there a gorge fest once they get fried?
Yeah, and actually, they stay, you know, my mom would make it in early December, and we'd be eating them all the way through till January. She'd keep them in a big Tupperware container, and they would stay fresh and moist, and each one was unique. They were like a snowflake, you know. You never saw two Futtiman the same.
Oh, Tim, thank you so much for sharing.
Sure.
All right, and happy holidays.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. And I want to move for a moment beyond Christmas into the new year, because there are other winter holidays that happen for many cultures around the world. And one of them is the Vietnam New Year. And with us, we have Vin Nguyen. Hello, Vin. Hi, Vin. Can you hear me? Okay, maybe we'll go to Vin in just a moment. We seem to have lost that connection for the moment. All right, we'll go to Vin a little bit later. But Bill is on the line from Des Moines. Hello, Bill.
Hi. I just wanted to share an annual traditional event that has been organized by the Scandinavian Club in the Des Moines metro area for about 35 years. They have an annual Christmas smorgasbord and a Santa Lucia celebration that you've already heard about. Rotates around to different churches in the Des Moines metro area, and the next event, of course, is coming up on Friday, that will be held at Zion Lutheran Church on Beaver Avenue. And it still is possible, if people would be interested in attending, they can contact my wife, and I can provide a phone number and email if that's appropriate.
Well, sure, we'll put you back on hold, and we'll take that down. And if anybody needs to get that, they can give us a call, and we'll pass that along. But thank you so much for sharing that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. And we do have Vin Nguyen on the line now. Hello, Vin.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good. Yes, I can hear you.
I can hear you very loud and clear. So
great. And the Vietnam New Year is actually not so much a winter celebration, but a celebration of spring.
That's correct. I mean, we use the lunar calendar. So Vietnamese New Year changes every year. You know, the day is not definite. So we have to look for the moon to make sure that we have the date correctly. And this year going to be in February, so 2011. But for Vietnamese, we call Tết, and we don't really celebrate Tết, but Vietnamese we would say we eat Tết, because Tết is for us is almost everything. It's the most important, a very popular holiday for the Vietnamese. Like I said, it's marking the arrival of the spring, but also a birthday for everybody. You know, everybody turned a year older during the Tết, so it's, for Vietnamese, it's very important. So we have a lot of different food, a lot of different activities. That's why we say we eat Tết. We don't celebrate Tết, because a lot of food.
And what kinds of food do you eat?
Well, we have a lot of traditional food. It depends on where you live in the country. But the main food that we have and we must have during Tết is the bánh chưng and bánh dày. Those are tightly packed sticky rice with meat and bean filling in the middle. And it's been wrapped with a very special leaf. Here in the state, we couldn't find them, so people have used the banana leaf to wrap them. And to prepare for this type of cake, it takes about 12 to 24 hours to cook them. So it's preparation is very time consuming. So therefore, it's important that we have that particular cake. We also have pickle. Onion, pickled cabbage, and we have all kind of dry candy fruit that we are rarely eating any time during the years. We just have to eat them during the New Year's. And then fruit. In Vietnam, we have all kinds of different fruit that you need to properly display on the altar at every family. So a lot of food. I remember my mom would prepare for 7 days.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And how long does the celebration go on? Is it just one night and day?
It depends on where you live in the country. In the city, likely we go for 3 days. But the preparation for that, it takes months to do it. Children would have day off on the 23rd of December, according to the lunar calendar. And then we have a week to prepare. You know, we get our house painted, cleaning up, and everything. You want to make sure it's clean and spotty clean to welcome the New Year. So there's different days that we prepare for it. So, for example, on the 23rd of December, we send the kitchen god. I'm not sure you have heard the story of kitchen god, the man who knows everything about your family matter. So we send him up to the heaven so he can go to the heaven, report our, you know, matters in the families, in the country, or whatever. And then the 30th, the day before the New Year's, is right about 12 o'clock. We call, in Vietnamese, we call Lễ Giao Thừa. It being at the transition between the old and the new. That where we have a large ceremony, we invite our ancestor back to the family so they can enjoy and eat that with us. So, and then, you know, out on the street, firework, dragon dance, lion dances, and people just going around and pretty cheerful mood. And then people would go to the temple or the churches to pray for the very first wishes of the New Year. So, and then on the first day, this is very important in Vietnamese culture. Whoever step in your house on the very first day of the year decides the fate of your family matter of the years. So when I was little, I remember my mom would arrange whoever that she trusts with prosperity, with dignity, you know. So she would arrange that person to come to our house first to make sure that our family.
So a lot of visiting and people must be in high demand if they're really wonderful people.
Yes, if you are doing a lousy job, you expect to see nobody on the first day of the year, you know. And then the first day we have a family kind of reunion things, big dinner or lunches and so on.
Well, Vin, we are out of time, but thank you so much for sharing some of your traditions. It sounds like wonderful, wonderful celebrations.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Vin Nguyen sharing some of the holiday traditions from Vietnam, and Ricky Saltzman has been with us today. Ricky, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Ricky Saltzman is Folklife Coordinator for the Iowa Arts Council. And we got one final email. Mark wrote, I was talking about a holiday tradition in my family of making fudgeons. And he says, this is the first time I've ever heard someone else speak of fudgeons outside of his family. My German grandma from Everly, Iowa, used to make this for all the grandparents or all the grandkids. We still have one aunt approaching 90 who still makes it. Thank you for the memory. And thank you so much for sharing your family holiday traditions with us. I hope you have a wonderful holiday season, no matter what you celebrate in your family. Talk of Iowa was produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Technical support from John Pemble in Des Moines. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa available at iowapublicradio.org. And send us email anytime at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, we're going to talk about holiday words, some of those words we only use this time of year, like Yule and Xmas. We'll talk about the origin of these different words with word maven Patricia O'Connor. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.